WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore positive. What was it? Dick Cash used to say, think positive, test negative during the COVID era. Think positive and hope to not get a WNST text from Luke Jones on the Coons Ford WNST text service, because there's two kinds of text you send, Luke. There's the one where the guy gets injured, and then there's the one you send when they sign Latavius Murray. This has become crazy. And, you know, people are asking me, is there something wrong with the turf out there? Well, first off, I ain't out there walking around. Even if I was, I'd say feels like nice grass to me. So this is like way above my pay grade as to why the plague has taken to people's bodies in Owings Mills and what the hell is going on out there. But, you know, we're sort of doing emergency radio every Thursday and Friday because the infirmary piles up. Quite frankly, their inability to be honest about injuries in an era where everybody's gambling on it and how they think this stuff gets hidden for a day or two or three or four, how that benefits them. I'll never know that. I'll never understand that, the paranoia. But here we are. Sunday Night Football. What's going on, Luke Jones? How are you?
Doing well, doing well. But I mean, you just said it. It feels like every time we get together to talk, and we talk quite frequently, we're talking about someone new. We're talking, and in this case,
some days I'm wearing the same shirt that we're talking so frequently. But right. This is my Fadley shirt today in my Wise mug. Yes,
right, and it looks nice. But
it does look nice. I'm gonna have a crab cake Monday, whether we win or lose. With my
there, you go. Hey,
I'm going to Lexington Market. A victory will be mine with the mac and cheese at Fadley's on Monday. But
I was just going to say it'll be a victory Monday for you in that case, regardless of how Sunday night plays out. But in this case, we're talking about an old injury here with Ronnie Stanley. And we talked about it, Nestor, after Monday night's game. So much of the focus was on Alejandro Villanueva, and understandably so, $8 million guaranteed. And he was awful. But I had said over the course of the conversation, Ronnie Stanley wasn't much better. And that's where you look at that and say, okay, is he right? Because we've seen a guy that maybe he isn't Jonathan Ogden, but he's certainly the best left tackle they've had since Jonathan Ogden. And that's a high standard. That's a compliment to what Stanley has been over these last 5-6 years. But when you see him struggle to the degree that he did, and you can look at these different websites like Pro Football Focus and Next Gen Stats, they're tracking pressures allowed, hurries, quarterback hits, all those different things.
And by the way, apparently Orlando Brown wasn't faring so well in pass protection last weekend either.
He wasn't, and we'll see if Adafe Owe and Justin Houston have something to say about that on Sunday night on the opposite side of the ball. But when you look at some of those measures, some of those numbers from Monday night in the case of Stanley, and we know there's subjectivity involved, but Pro Football Focus had tracked him giving up as many pressures as he basically gave up in the entire 2019 season. Now think about that for a second. You're talking about a guy who 2 years ago, when he was an all-pro, Pro Bowl left tackle, not talking about last year with the injury, 2 years ago, what he did on Monday night was roughly, he had as many miscues Monday night as he roughly did the entire 2019 season. So that's something's not right there. We didn't see him on Wednesday. John Harbaugh was asked. He had no update. That was a little bit of a red flag. But and since then, you know, there have been reports as Stanley hasn't practiced. I'd say this. We're not allowed to report on what the alignment is out at practice. But I would just say the alignment sounds some alarm in terms of Alejandro Villanueva has been a right tackle from the moment he arrived in Baltimore over the course of OTAs, mini camp, training camp. And you know me, I miss very few days out in Owings Mills. I did not see him line up at left tackle once. You read the tea leaves there in terms of some concern, not just for Sunday night, but who knows what that means moving forward. But what I will say about that is the guy we saw on Monday night wasn't Ronnie Stanley, as far as the player that we've come to know. So if he physically is not right, if that ankle is not right, and he needs some time to get back to full health, they have no choice but to acquiesce and shut him down for a while, because he's too important to the big picture, whether that means he misses a week, whether that means he misses a month, whether that means more than that. I don't know. And I would assume we'll get more details as we get closer to Sunday, and the Adam Schefters of the world, the team will leak out information or what have you. But it's a concern because I go back to late April and you and I kind of sparring back and forth about the Orlando Brown trade. And my concern was never that it was bad value or anything like that. My concern was what? You still have to think about 2021.
Sure.
Right. And what I look at with that trade, look, they got Odafe Owe with the 31st overall pick. Good season debut for him. I think they're encouraged. They like what they see from him. Great. Good. Long term, that makes it a good deal. If Ben Cleveland, who they also got in that swap of picks with Kansas City, becomes a starting guard for them at some point in the near future, then great. That makes the trade even better. But there was always that question of what? The 2021 value of having Orlando Brown Jr. at right tackle, with the assumption that if Ronnie Stanley wasn't right early in the season, or he goes down with a 1 or 2 week injury, which has happened in the past, even before this ankle injury, then you put him at left tackle and you don't have as much of a concern there. Now you look at Villanueva, who we'll see if he's at left tackle, maybe that gets him going. There's lots of muscle memory. That's where he played in Pittsburgh. But the guy I saw on Monday night wasn't moving well, wasn't bending well. And I don't think moving from right to left tackle is going to fix that. I think those are issues of a guy who is about to turn 33 years old. And it might just be that he's over the hill and really declining, which was kind of the sentiment in Pittsburgh. So, but
33 on the O-line, this isn't the Bruce Matthews era anymore. I don't think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You look at Ogden, you look at Yonda, you look at where Matt Burke, kind of a special guy in different ways, but I'm not saying Villanueva is not, and the whole like military background, I'm all for that, but the tape plays and the Chiefs are the best team in football and they're going to be measured across the board. And this is really where you find out if the emperor has no clothes all the way around. I mean, John hasn't beaten Andy since Donovan McNabb, right? Who was that guy's name? Kevin?
Cobb, wasn't it?
There you go. Thank you very much. The Ed Reed pick. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, we're going back 15 years here, right? So, I would just say where Lamar is, the kryptonite part of this, the fans' expectations, Sunday Night Football, the fact that they are not the better team. There's no case to be made that the Ravens were the better team, even if they were 100% healthy and had won in Vegas the other night, even if Dobbins is running the ball and Edwards is there to be the Gus Bus in the second half and Marcus Peters is out running around with Tyreek Hill and pushing these guys around and stripping the ball from Kelsey and going up and all that's gone, dude. And then there's the offensive line. So, and the fact that the wide receiver that they drafted isn't on the field, like all of these issues of the hopes and dreams of May and June set forth to the realities of injuries of August and then playing in 6 days in September against the best team on the planet, who looks very healthy. I mean, I have Adam Teicher on this week. I had Danny Welniak on this week. I had Brian McCray on. They're all like, Honey Badger's coming back this week. I'm like, we got nobody coming back. Wait, and this is on Tuesday. And then on Thursday, the rest of the thing starts to fall apart as well. Go through the whole infirmary for everyone. Go piece by piece as to who was on the field in the Washington football game 3 weeks ago versus now. Like, who's standing?
Well, do you want me to just go down the injured reserve list and then I'll get to the injury report for this week?
Hey, well, the amazing part is like if this were week 11 or 12 or 14, you'd say, you know what? It's just been a bad year.
Yeah.
But when it's week one, literally – It's uncanny. It really is uncanny.
It really is. It's just been so condensed. I mean, it's happened in such a short period of time. If you looked at their injury list now, their injured reserve list now, and to your point, it was November, it would feel like a rough season, but it wouldn't feel extraordinary. The fact that a month ago, literally a month ago, they had LJ Fort. They had, Rashad Bateman had been kind of banged up in the spring and the summer. So that one had kind of been, it came to a head, obviously, when he pulled up lame and had to be helped off the field. And we know he got the surgery a few days later. But you had Marcus Peters. You had J.K. Dobbins. You had Gus Edwards. You had Tyree Phillips. Miles Boykin hurt his hamstring early in camp. So that one, you know, that one, Nick Boyle, the knee injury from last year.
I forgot about him. He's still on a team, right? Like, there are guys I haven't even seen move to realize, like, where, like Jimmy Smith feels like he's not on the team to me. I haven't seen him, so he's not there.
He might be back this week. So if you're looking for a good piece of news, you know, he's practicing. He was limited last week. You figured he was going to need a week because he missed over a month of camp with the ankle. I feel pretty good about him being back now.
By the way, the Bateman kid to me is like Sergio Kindle. It's like I've just written him off. And when seriously, I'm not being a dick. Yeah. I'm just sort of like, he's Sergio Kindle. He's just the guy we drafted. And when he shows up, I hope he's not Perryman. You know what I mean? And if he's not, great. That's a bonus. But you know what I'm counting on from him? Zero as a fan. I don't expect him out there week 8. I don't expect to see him catching 9 balls against Chicago or down in Miami when the Heat hits on that Thursday night and the Ravens are 3-6 or 6-3. I don't know what the hell they're going to be. I guess that's why I'm watching the games. But I'm not expecting the Bateman kid to catch 40 balls this year. You know, like I'm just not. Now, Sammy Watkins, I mean, of all the things, Dennis is, you know, I love having Dennis on the show, but Dennis said something. And I don't think about it like this. He's like, if the game would have ended with 30 seconds left to go, Sammy Watkins would have been the star. We'd be discussing all of this so differently. And I wanted to bring that up with you because, like, that's not something you and I did in the aftermath when I'm sitting in Las Vegas. It's 3 a.m. for you. And we're just talking about the game in real time, in real ways, because it was a loss and there's no other way to talk about it. But it is amazing how all of that, they'd be a 1-0 team right now with a lot of injuries and a lot of problems and whatever, trying to figure it out. But all of it, you do feel like the sky is falling, and it does feel like, how in the world are they going to beat this football team on Sunday night?
Yeah, and I mean, it really does illustrate how razor thin the margin between winning and losing is in the NFL. I mean, this isn't Alabama going up against some mid-major school that's getting a payday early in September. I mean, it's not that. As much as it feels that way sometimes when you think about the Dolphins a couple years ago when the Ravens went down there and hung, 59 points on them. Those scenarios are very rare. That's why that 2019 team was just so strict. It was just so amazing the way that they just blew out teams
to play them on a week-by-week basis. Sure. Defensive coordinators really didn't know what to do. And even if they knew what to do, they didn't have the pieces to stop it on every play. And it was only 3 or 4 plays where all hell would break loose and you'd be losing by 3 touchdowns. And it really was crazy. And even during it, I think we said 2nd and 2 on every possession is not normal. You know, it's just not normal.
Of course. And they had an extremely healthy and strong offensive line. Think about that. Ronnie Stanley, who missed the Jets game that year with the concussion, but he was healthy other than that. Bradley Bozeman posted up and started at left guard. Matt Skura played well until that was the one injury they had. And then Patrick McCary came in and played well. They had Marshall Yanda at right guard. They had Orlando Brown at right tackle. I mean, you penciled in that lineup every week, save for, you know, until the Skura injury. And then they had a replacement who did a nice job. And now we're seeing the difference last year. We're seeing the difference already in 2021.
Well, you see the difference when you lose a Hall of Famer. I mean, the Ravens burped with this big time with Gaither and, you know, struggle with it throughout that era until they figured out Bryant McKinney and, you know, that Orr wasn't the answer. I mean, you know, blind side, left tackle, they make all the money, they go to the Hall of Fame. We realize the significance of it. And certainly this Stanley thing, back to the very beginning, first chapter, which was this time last year, I'm sitting here watching the game on TV, which is so weird for me, right? Like, I've watched 8 games on TV in my life, and I'm in my condo, and my wife turned her back, and he went down, and I went, oh my God, their season's over. And that's how I felt then, right? And I remembered being very emotional with you about it the next day, and just telling that story, and it kind of played out that was the beginning of the end. This is the end of the beginning. I mean, literally, because they don't have an answer for this. They don't have it. Villanueva is not. I mean, they can play him fine. And whether he'll even hold up, given the age and like all of that, that somebody else isn't there. I just watched the Orioles play out the string, or, you know, whatever that is. Whatever's going to be on the field here, it's not going to be because of lack of strategy. But you're going to have some guys coming up from Norfolk, and that's just where it is at this point.
It won't be as bad as that, but you're right. You do get to a point, and we're already seeing it. They bring back Andre Smith on the practice squad, a guy who I know is a former first-round pick of Marvin Lewis, and Marvin knows him very well, but he showed nothing in the spring and the summer that says he belongs on an NFL roster right now. And that's
sort of the Andre Garrard. You know, we've had a couple of Willie Anderson at the end. I mean, the Ravens are, Ozzie loved old offensive linemen. He did just smart offensive linemen.
Willie Anderson did a hell of a job for the Ravens in 2008. I mean, you can find guys from time to time, but a lot of times it's going to be the alternative. You said it at the beginning, talking about the age of offensive linemen as it relates to Villanueva. We remember the guys who play into their mid-30s. You mentioned Matthews. Marshall Yanda was that exception. I mean, Yanda played until, what, age 35 at a really high level.
You know what's funny, dude? You said Marshall Yanda, and you were going through the players 2 years ago, and I'm like, I was going to say Marshall Yanda in his prime, but it wasn't far off of his prime. I mean, went to his locker every night after those games, and he couldn't stop smiling about just kicking the snot out of everybody every week. And he left on that note, and he's probably going to the Hall of Fame. I hope he goes to the Hall of Fame.
I hope so.
But it was almost his prime, and that's, I guess, takes me back to where I started talking about Ogden and Gaither and all that and sort of interrupted you on it. But losing Yanda is still part of the bleeding here, that you don't pick up the pieces from losing a Hall of Famer like that in that position.
Well, and it's just the impact it has on you. And look, they bring in Kevin Zeitler. You know, Zeitler played – he was fine on Monday night. I didn't think he played poorly. But there's that year gap between those two that they really struggled at that position. Okay, you think you figured out right guard now? Well, your franchise left tackle, who you paid nearly $100 million 2 days before he hurt his ankle last November 1st, still isn't right. And again, I don't want to get too far ahead and suggest that Ronnie Stanley's not going to play football this year, because we got to see what this looks like. He's getting opinions, and hopefully we'll get some kind of meaningful update from the team at some point here, whether it's whether it's before Sunday night, whether it's after Sunday night, whenever. You just look at that, left guard. I mean, Bradley Bozeman's playing center now. You hope you've stabilized that, but he's going to be a free agent, and you're going to have to either pay him or you're going to be starting over there. I mean, it's just, it's very difficult. That's why I go back, Nestor, to 2 years ago when they fall to Tennessee in the divisional round, and so many Ravens fans, I mean, the disappointment was so palpable because that team was so dominant over the course of the season. And so many fans wanted to say, well, they were a year early, they were ahead of schedule. And those things are fine to tell yourself that, but you also know how this league works. It can be very fleeting. They don't say not for long as an abbreviation, as a nickname for the National Football League, not for long. They don't say that if there wasn't reason for it. And things change because of injuries, because of the salary cap, because of COVID, which, no one could have predicted that last year as it pertains to football. And things change very quickly. Think about the Jacksonville Jaguars. What, 4 years ago, they were winning in the second half of the AFC Championship against Tom Brady and the Patriots. And that franchise has completely started over since then. At the time, people were thinking, wow, there's a new power in the AFC. There's an ascending
Philadelphia
team in the
Eagles
AFC.
Won the Super Bowl, and I don't know who the hell's on their team anymore.
New quarterback, new head coach. It doesn't take long. And that wasn't to say that the Ravens were doomed 2 years ago. It was to say, wow, that's a really missed opportunity, because you don't know if the stars are going to align in the same way every year.
And by the way, anytime anybody leans back to throw a pass for the New England Patriots in any other jersey, it looks like a replacement game, right? It looks to me like that movie with Shane Falco. It looks like, and I remember replacement football in 1982, where guys were just running around in helmets and you had no idea who the hell they were. The Patriots feel that way to me when it's not Tom Brady. I'm like, who's that cat? What's that number? Because you've seen it for so long. And I think maybe when Brett Favre left the Packers, and I'm sure when Johnny Unitas left here, whatever, you get that, that broken vibe of like, what's wrong there? What's wrong? We still have Harbaugh walking the sidelines here, and the helmets are still purple, and we still play some defense around here. But I think the level of expectation if the Chiefs come in and put a beat down on them Sunday night, and I'm not saying that's the way it's going to be, and I tell you what, the Ravens aren't susceptible to that. You know, John doesn't live that way. John doesn't, like, historically. I mean, for whatever differences I ever have with John, John's a hell of a coach in getting ready for a game like this. And I don't expect him to go out and lose 44-14 on Sunday night. But the Chiefs are capable of doing that to you.
Sure.
And with this team and Lamar and his demeanor when things go the wrong way, I've never loved it. I know nobody loved Flacco's stoic thing, and I always defended that as probably the way to go. The pounding on the dirt when you don't get a first down, and the crowd starts leaning, and our crowd's going to be boozed up and booing. I mean, they cheered Kyle Bowler getting injured 15 years ago, Josh. So I'm just telling you, when things go wrong here on Sunday night and the team's 0-1 and people are paying $235 to sit in the lower deck, my seat in the upper deck, the seat next to me, is available and $195 through the box office. I checked the other day. Maybe I should sell my tickets. But I'm just saying, expectation, not having gone to the game, and if things are tight and it's good, great. Yeah. But if things start to go wrong on Sunday night, I am very, very concerned by the fans, the home team, because I don't think they're going to win. I don't necessarily think they'll play poorly. I think the Chiefs can make other teams look to play poorly. I just think Mahomes is a technician here, and I'm concerned about it not going well Sunday. So you can talk me in or out of the tree, but that is my pre-prediction. And I really hope they play well, and I hope it's a great game. And if they lose, it's a heartbreaker. And if they win, it's a nail biter and like all of that. But I am concerned for the first time in a little while that they're going to a gunfight with a water pistol.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Look, they could have beaten the Raiders by 50 on Monday night, and I was going to pick Kansas City just because we've seen this movie so many times. And now, when you consider the injuries, whether you're talking about Ronnie Stanley, the number of injuries they had before week one, but Ronnie Stanley's uncertain status for week two and moving forward, we'll see. I mean, hopefully he's back soon and playing at a much higher level, because the guy in week one, he didn't help them. I mean, that's just the reality. It was Ronnie Stanley, the human being, but it wasn't Ronnie Stanley, the left tackle we've come to know. So that's why I said, yeah, you kind of look at that and say, all right, if you need to shut him down, you got to shut him down. And however long it takes, you got to do it. And you have to try to tread water the best you can. But you just look at it. You know, no Marcus Peters already. You know, we'll see about Jimmy Smith. He's practicing. I think there's a reasonable chance he's going to be out on the field. So that should help, you hope. At the same time, Jimmy Smith's 33 now. So even him fully healthy, what does that look like? Because we didn't see it most of training camp. He got hurt the first week of August. Chris Westry, who we haven't mentioned yet, the 6'4" corner who had such a nice spring and summer. You heard me mention him how many times where you hadn't even heard who he was. Fans hadn't. Why would they? He was a reserve future signing in January with the
He's
Cowboys.
Sort of the Tavon Young of this year, right? The Will Demps, the guy that just has shined at every level to get himself onto the field. And I mean, Chuck Clark is that guy, right?
Sure, sure. But in the case of Westry, 6'4" on the outside, and we know Tavon Young didn't look right on Monday night. I do think the second pass interference on him was not a great call. I think that was a rough call that went against him, but that's going to happen. But Tavon Young didn't look like the old Tavon Young there. So they moved Marlon into the slot. And
well, to your point, he's two injuries in, right?
I mean, two knee injuries, and then you throw
in. Okay, so I remember what that did to Anthony Poindexter, and I have to think that the Ronnie Stanley thing we're talking about here is these guys are not Stratomatic players. They don't just pick up in 6 weeks and move around at 330 pounds in the National Football League to go out and play the Chargers. You know, like, it's just not the way it works with injuries early in the season. And I think you and I sort of know that as the grizzled vets around here, which is why I'm code violet right now on the lavender, concern meter. I'm violet. I think this is This is really a rough spot for the franchise right now and a rough spot for Lamar. And I do want to say this about them winning Sunday night. If they win, it's going to be because he puts on a cape. And he's capable of that.
Sure.
He's capable of that. So, I mean, I want to make that very clear. But I think he needs to have other magicians. He needs rabbits around him and hats in order to be able to do what he does. And certainly needs some sense of symphony that this thing does work in concert. He's running backs. He doesn't know their names. They have exchange issues. He has wide receivers who probably weren't good enough to begin with, even if everything was great. He's got to figure out how to get on the ball. And now he's got no tackles, really, and whatever the guard situation is going to be, right?
Yeah.
And I think the level of expectation on him by the people forking over $235 to sit in the lower level in the end zone on Monday night or Sunday night, will adding alcohol at $20 a beer. And like, I just think this is a really rough spot, and I hope he puts a cape on and I hope he plays great and they either win or lose 38-35. Right.
Right. Right. I mean, it comes down to this. The one word, especially with the Stanley news, and I mean, Chris Westry's going to be out, so their secondary situation is, you know, looked so deep 3 weeks ago, and now you're already starting to look at this and say, oh, you know, this is shaky. And you know, Marquise Brown's missed some time this week with a sore ankle, and Derek Wolfe is going to miss another game. And I mean, you just look at all that.
I forgot about him.
Out of sight, out of mind for close to a month now. It's been since he's practiced. But the word that I keep coming back to, Nestor, is pressure. Pressure to beat the Chiefs. Pressure to not fall to 0-2, because we know what that historically means. Although, you know, you hear the 11-12% of 0-2 teams that go on to make the playoffs. Most of those 0-2 teams are terrible to begin with. So that number isn't real, but it sounds perilous, right? It sounds like, oh my gosh, you fall to 0-2. It's over. The season's not over if they fall 0-2. But
I think the notion there is if you're 0-2, you might be one of, there's an 89% chance you're one of the bad ones.
It could be. It's a
warning sign.
This is why I keep coming back to 2015. And look, the difference, and you just mentioned it a couple minutes ago. Lamar Jackson is that dynamic where you feel he has the capability with his athleticism and his pure talent that he can put a cape on and win you some games that you might not have any business winning. And maybe that happens Sunday night. And let's keep in mind, we've seen the Kansas City Chiefs do this thing as great as they are. And look, they're the class of the AFC until someone proves otherwise. But we've seen, even going back to last year, they've almost become like that NBA team where they seem bored for large stretches of the game. And the Browns took it to them for 2.5 quarters. Let's call a spade in week one. Cleveland was the better team for most of that game. I mean, they were. But Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and a team that's won a Super Bowl and has been to two straight Super Bowls, they have that ability to go on that run, and you know it's going to come. So that's where the Ravens, the formula for them to pull out an upset victory on Sunday night is to start fast, get out to a lead, maybe force an early turnover, get up two scores, and then you can just pound the rock and lean into that. And Lamar's going to be running the ball a lot. And yeah, they'll hand it to Tyson Williams and Latavius Murray and Devontae Freeman's on the 53-man roster now. And you just try to do that. But when you do that, you've got to finish drives. You've got to score touchdowns. So the pressure to try to do something like that, the pressure of the fans, as you mentioned, the pressure to keep the pressure off of Lamar Jackson in the pocket, to try to pressure Patrick Mahomes. Pressure, pressure, pressure. That is the
word. And I think using the crowd as an advantage, not a disadvantage, because the crowd's going to be there, but the crowd's going to be where the game is. And if it's 14-3 early,
they're concerned.
Bad news.
They're concerned.
Yeah, I mean, staying in the fight, field goals instead of touchdowns on the other side, touchdowns instead of field goals on our side, you know, no mistakes, fumbles, interceptions, big, block kicks, bad special teams play, like all of those. I had Coach Billick on, by the way. I just want to plug this. I had Coach Billick. I had Mike Nolan on too, but I had Coach Billick on, and Coach Billick finally told me, and don't tell anybody, that all that next man up thing is bullshit. So he finally admitted it.
Hey, I
want you to go watch it. I want you to see it, okay?
I'll get
Feinstein on too to prove it.
You know what I said? I've said this for going back to that 2015 team. I said, look, that is a great rallying cry, but at some point in time, you get to a point with so many injuries, it's a t-shirt slogan. And I don't know if the Ravens are there yet, but boy, they are getting close at this point. And I don't say that with any disrespect. I think this was a very talented roster in the spring and the summer, but I read off the names. I read off the names on IR. I read off the names that aren't going to be out there Sunday night that you're hoping to get back at some point. You get to a point where it's too much to ask. And that's not to say they're going to give up. It's not to say
the depth chart, when you look at it on paper, is what's really going to be on the field. And then that is going to have to go execute against the best team on earth.
That's fully healthy right now, too. By the way, Thursday, the injury report Thursday, all 53 members of the Chiefs roster, full participants in practice. Just think about that.
All the more reason that I remember, and I had Billick on this week, that miracle game when McAllister against the Broncos, when the turnaround year that, you know, we gave up but didn't give up against them. I hope we can create a little bit of that purple-black magic is what we need to do. Luke Jones has been in Owings Mills. He'll be in Owings Mills all next week before the Detroit game. I tell you what. Costas on Friday for me. We're with Johnny O. I have an incredible reunion with a whole bunch of sports friends and sports writers on Saturday. I'll be out on social media having some fun with that. Obviously, on Sunday, we got game time. But before that, going to be at Wise Markets with Rob Santoni and the Crab Wagon having the Wise $6 Signature Crab Cake. So the Crab Cake Tour, Costas. Then the Wise Markets in Fullerton on Sunday at 11 a.m. And then I'm going to be having a Fadley's Crab Cake on Monday as well. I am Nestor. He is Luke. You can find both of us out on the interwebs. He is Baltimore Luke. I am the aforementioned Nestor Aparicio on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Snapchat, and anywhere the purple flock travels. Let's all join hands and pray for the Ravens. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop bleeding a little purple and black and orange and other things. We're Baltimore Positive.